Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read. My eye was drawn to movement below me on the stairs. I brought up my pistol and fired without thinking, just as the open door clipped a man who had appeared with his gun aimed at me. The combination of my bullet and the door put him down in a way that made me think he was not going to get back up again. It was the man I'd attacked before taking the Suburban. Four men, all dead. I climbed the stairs and entered in through the hole where the front doors had hung moments before. And now, episode 19. As I walked through the door, I was coiled like a snake ready to strike, doing my best to leave all thoughts of the men I'd killed outside. I was zeroing in on my prey. Reed was here and had known I was coming, otherwise he wouldn't have sent his men out to deal with me so quickly. The timing of their response confirmed my suspicions that he had been aware of Chris and had taken advantage of that knowledge to lead me here. He could not have known I would have been so willing to slaughter his men. Based on everything he'd seen me do, except shooting Sam, he'd still believed I was the same person who had escaped from Blackbrick. Nothing could have been further from the truth. The few seconds I'd had before I'd decided to shoot Sam had changed my life forever. A deadened killer like Reed would not have understood. He was so far past feeling empathy he had not recognized the ramification of Sam's death. It might have been avoidable for another person, but not for me. He had needed to die. I had fought Peck and Reed using moral methods, and it had got me nowhere. I had given Sam many opportunities to rethink his decisions, but he'd still come at me, putting me in a position where I'd been forced to kill him. It was only in the days afterward that I fully came to understand what I'd instinctively known when I had pulled the trigger. To stop Peck and Reed, I had to sink to their level. The voice in the back of my head that would have argued with that conclusion had been silenced, though like sunshine on the fringe of the storm I could still feel that it was there, mourning for those I had killed. That part of me was locked away, and I did not let those thoughts touch me. I could not afford to. Perhaps one day, but not today. Reed needed to die, and I was going to kill him. The mansion was spacious and well-kept, or at least it had been until I'd rammed the house with a heavy SUV and severed the doors from their hinges. Debris was scattered everywhere, broken brick, mortar, and glass crunched underfoot as I made my way through. An expensive vase on a table near the door had somehow survived while a statue beside it had been shattered into 100 pieces. The Suburban engine and the crunch underfoot were the only sounds I could hear. I caught the faint whiff of floor wax and noticed it was shiny enough to see my reflection. Nothing moved as I continued my way into the home. Grand staircases went up on either side of the entry and met in a balcony that overlooked where I stood. The four men I had taken down could not have been the only people on site. I kept my Glock ready to fire. It seemed strange that for all the damage and death I had just caused, I'd used only one bullet. Everything else had been done with the oversized sport utility vehicle. It underscored the point that there were many ways to kill, and while a gun was one of the most efficient, it wasn't the only way of getting the job done. The rooms to either side of the entryway were empty, or at least they appeared that way from my position in the hallway. I didn't go through the thorough job I might have done if I'd had plenty of time, and somebody to watch my back. I wanted to be gone within 5 minutes, if not sooner. All the shooting from Reed's men was bound to have caught somebody's attention, and while the mansion was secluded enough, the neighbors wouldn't be aware of where things had happened, I didn't want to be around when the authorities started poking around. After running up one of the staircases and peeking over the final stair, I found nothing of interest. Something drew me forward, but I hesitated, wondering about the best approach. I raised my head to get a better view, expecting to find somebody with a gun aimed in my direction, but the way was clear. Seeing the grandness of its high ceilings made me realize the enormity of my task. 5 minutes, I snorted. I wouldn't make it through the first floor in under 10. Shaking my head but not knowing what else to do, I decided to begin my search on the first floor, moving as quick as possible. I had not seen any cameras but figured my luck would run out and that they would soon know my location if they did not already. Back on the first floor, I made a close inspection, as good a job as can be done in 10 seconds, and didn't find any indication of hidden cameras. Most of the rooms I passed were open spaces, allowing me to take a quick look and move on. I was taking a terrible risk, but if I could catch Reed in a place he wasn't expecting, it would be worth it. I shortly came to an intersecting hallway. A place this big had to employ maids and other servants to be this well maintained. The area was still quiet as I decided which way to go next. The stillness was unnerving, considering all the adrenaline coursing through my veins and my desire for action. My hands began to shake, so I wedged my pistol into my armpit so I could stretch my fingers and get the blood flowing again. I had not come this far to have it come to naught. I went right, moving as fast as I dared and keeping my pistol in front of me, turning my whole body as I peeked around corners and into rooms. In one room, I found a dropped tray. The contents of 3 meals were spilled onto the carpet, steak and potatoes, fish, and a hamburger. The steak was still hot. The accident must have happened when all the shooting started. Considering the early morning hour, I would have expected breakfast foods. Perhaps Reed had done such a thorough job with his evil charade they had not had time for dinner. The 3 meals reassured me that I was on the right track. I assumed Margaret had ordered the fish and that the hamburger had been for Benji. Blood pounded in my ears. Sweat formed on my hands, making my pistol slick as I scoured the room, looking for any way out other than the door I used to enter. I wasted more than a minute on a bookshelf, wondering if it contained a hidden passageway. I considered tipping it over, but thought better of it, not wanting the sound to give me away. After pulling out several books at random, each of which I placed on the floor, I decided it wasn't hiding anything and left, hoping I was zeroing in on them. I continued down the hallway, moving faster now. Because I assumed the servant had been moving towards them, I would reverse direction if I found the kitchen in this wing. I lost count of the rooms. Some were identifiable, but for most I was at a loss as to their purpose. When I came to a set of double doors on the left, I eased one open and found a spacious ballroom with windows that went up several stories. The lights were off, and it had a strong chemical odor that made me think that the floors had been cleansed within the last few days. From my vantage point, I could see there were not many places a person could be hiding. I skipped the next several doors on the left, but checked those on the right. When I came to a wide set of spiral stairs at the end of the hallway, I checked my watch and muttered a curse. It had taken me 7 minutes to get this far. I had not made a bit of progress and was still working off guesses. Had I made a mistake in coming here? Once I decided Reed was on to us, wouldn't it have been better to back off and find a way to keep an eye on him that would keep us off his radar? I took the stairs 2 at a time. Keeping to the inward part of the spiral to minimize the amount of my body that showed as I approached the next floor. I still hadn't seen a single security camera, which could only mean they were hidden. A place this big would have security. Reed had just taken great pains to keep it on the down low. As I came to the top, I looked for hidden cameras. A statue that a more refined person might have recognized as fine art was on the landing. The way it was positioned made me think that this was where the security camera had been hidden. I studied it while focusing on its eyes, knowing I was unlikely to find the camera. It wouldn't matter if I did. I would never find them all. Unfortunately, this also meant Reed would use any footage to bolster his false image of me, and that he knew where I was. The statue stuck out as an ideal place for the hidden camera. I wished I would have thought to examine the shattered statue back at the entryway. I would look for another 5 minutes, maybe 10. After that, I would get out of here and find a way to come at Reed again. At least I knew where he lived. I shook my head as I walked the hallway, checking doors as I passed. He was here. I knew he was here. It was a shame to be so close but have no other option than to leave. The doors on the side of the ballroom led to a balcony I had not noticed from below. As I came out from the balcony, I heard a voice in the direction I had been moving. I sped up, skipping most of the doors as I passed. I told myself it was a trap. My window of opportunity was closing fast. If Reed had made a mistake, I needed to take advantage of it. When I heard the voice again, I increased my speed until I ran at a low jog, hoping to catch whoever it was unaware. I came to a wide opening on the left and slid to a halt when I heard the voice again. Rows of chairs faced a movie screen and a projector hung overhead. The seats weren't comfortable enough to make this a theater room. It reminded me of a classroom. I envisioned Reed standing at the front giving instructions to his employees, or training Margaret and Benji. "Jake, what have you done?" I recognized the voice now, but my heart sunk because I could tell it was coming from the tinny speaker of a handheld device. Not bothering to answer, I moved towards it. I could recognize now that it was Reed. "It saddens me you've become a cold-blooded killer. First Sam and now my men out front. I thought you were better than this." My heart leapt into my throat. The kids were with him. He wouldn't be talking like this unless they were. They had to be close. The food had been one thing. It could have been for somebody else. Reed had to be close to use the walkie-talkie. The radio was in the middle of a row of chairs, but I did not approach. After I had spotted it, I took a step back and tried to figure out what Reed was up to. He had put it there for a reason. He wanted me to respond to him, to slow me down. I put my back against the nearest wall where I thought things through, while I thought things through. He could not have gone far. There had not been time. It had been less than 10 minutes since I'd slammed the Suburban into the house, less than 1 minute since I'd first heard his voice. "I wanted to believe you were telling the truth. I had thought you a victim of circumstance. I had even hoped we could clear your name." I shook his head. I shook my head. His words weren't for me. They were for the children. Even knowing that, his words influenced me. They struck a subconscious chord. Until he'd kidnapped me, I had believed Reed was rational and given me the benefit of the doubt. I did not believe he would set the record straight. He had too much to gain by setting me up. There were 4 doors in this room. How long had it been used? How long had it been since he'd left the radio here? 1 minute? Maybe 2. He had to have used one of these doors because he wouldn't want to risk seeing me in the hallway. I bit my lip while his taunts continued. "Your mother remembers you," he said. "Did you know that? She blames herself for what you have become." He clicked his tongue reprovingly. "It's not too late." I refused the bait. I did not care about the woman I'd once called mother. My adopted father was the one who had mattered. Well, he and Sister Bautista. It galled me that my former mother had started another family. How was she able to live with herself after what she'd done to me? I wanted to find her kid and let him know what a raw deal he'd gotten. My grip tightened on my pistol, and my finger moved the trigger back in an imperceptible amount. It was a constant struggle to keep the bitterness from outweighing my feelings for my adopted father, but I forced myself to do it. He and Sister Bautista were the last good memories I had. I chose to believe both had been good people who had done their best to look out for me. Some days I believed it more than others, but I had no such feeling for my fake mother. I let out a long breath and repacked my emotional baggage. Reed was barking up the wrong tree if he hoped to work me into a frenzy. Seeing through his tactics helped me regain my focus as I analyzed the doors. Then I saw it, realizing I was a fool for not noticing it before. The door on the far side of the room had been disguised to look like the others, but the deadbolt gave it away. As I crossed the room, Reed spoke again. "It's not too late." The door was locked. I rapped on it with a finger and determined it was solid metal under the thin layer of paint. I pulled out a knife and cut into the wall beside the door, ripping out a rough-edged square of sheetrock that I tossed behind me. If the wall on the other side were made of sheetrock, I would swallow a bullet. I pushed my knife through the hole and felt it scrape against metal. The radio crackled, but no words came. I had found him. He was in a panic room. Well, that is all we're going to read from Blood Games this week, but just as we did last week, we're going to read the next chapter of Monkey House, a short story that is available on Amazon. 3. I'm not sure that's a good idea. I gave Fuzzball a suspicious look, wondering if he would, if he could tell I was having a difficult time believing him. He was too busy looking around to notice my reaction. The franticness of his actions also made me look about uneasily. It was best if Becker and I parted with Fuzzball here and now, but the level of concern on his face was disconcerting. "We have to get inside," he said. "I can answer your questions then." Becker growled. As I raised my hand to signal that he should settle down, I noticed he was not looking at Fuzzball. He was focused on my neighbor's cornfield. What had gotten into him? Fuzzball bounced up and down, his childlike face torn in fear. I inhaled, my insides turning to ice. I could not leave Fuzzball out here, not like this. Every instinct in my body prevented me from doing it, yet I knew full well that unless I was in a courtroom, having previously spent hours reviewing depositions and evidence, that I was susceptible to deception. Marjorie always said I couldn't tell the difference between a thief and a priest. Unfortunately, she was right, so I'd learned to be careful of the situations that required I make immediate decisions. I had just learned the hard way too many times. That was part of why I'd become a litigator. My job had rarely required fast decisions. There was almost always time to think and reflect on a particular issue. Fuzzball quaked, still looking around like a scared rabbit as if he were about to dash off in any direction at the slightest provocation. Whether it was based on something real or not, his fear looked genuine. "Answer them now," I said, trying to keep my agitation from showing in my voice. "They're after me," he said, "and they will get you too. We are running out of time. I will only answer your questions once we're inside." I shook my head and was about to tell him to leave when Becker started barking. That is it for this week. Thank you for tuning in, and next week we'll have more from both Blood Games and Mucky House.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.